I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ, and archived on TVTimeMachine.com.
I'm sure that you'll be as delighted as I am to know that we have as our in-person guest tonight one of the nation's foremost homemaking authorities, Miss Mary Margaret McBride.
Hi.
Yes, Mary?
I'm not Mary Margaret McBride. My name is Barbara Eden.
Barbara Eden, of course. I thought you'd lost a little weight. I'm sorry. Picked up, Barbara, as I'm sure that our viewers recognize you from your many television and motion picture appearances. Ladies and gentlemen, of course, this is Miss Barbara Eden. There is just one problem, Barbara. All the questions that I have for our interview are supposed to be asked of Mary Margaret McBride.
Oh, well, couldn't we just ad-lib some questions and answers?
Well, we could, but then I'd have all these homemaking questions left over.
Well, why not invite Zsa Zsa Gabor to answer them?
We're back again with singer, dancer, actress, and TV legend Barbara Eden, author of her memoir, Genie Out of the Bottle, right here on the TV Time Machine. Barbara, in the middle 1960s, you landed the role of your career as the lovable and magical genie in I Dream of Genie, as we'll hear in the following clip.
I rescued you. I rescued that. That means I get a free wish or something. Genies do that, don't they? Well, of course they do. Yeah, genie, I tell you what, I wish. I wish there was a big, beautiful P2V right up in the sky over my head, right now.
Dorom ketoam sarvari.
I have to get a genie who doesn't speak English. Genie, I wish you could speak English.
Yaw, shaw, hey, parian. Somehow I must find a way to please thee, master.
Forget it. You'll never be able to please me as long as you don't understand. You spoke English. That's all I had to do was say, I wish.
Thou may ask anything of thy slave, master.
That's very kind of you. I actually don't need anything at the moment.
Barbara, how did I Dream of Genie materialize as a TV series and as a role for you?
Well, I had been released from Fox, and I had done two films at Columbia, two at MGM, and two at Universal, and I guest starred on a couple of TV shows. And I didn't really know what I was going to do next. I had been reading in the trades about this show, I Dream of Genie, and they were testing all the gorgeous brunettes in town, all these long-legged beauty queens, you know. Right. I thought, well, that's not for me. And then one day I was sent a script, and I read it. My agent called me and said, what did you think of the script? I said, it's fabulous. I love it, but are you sure they know what I look like? And he said, well, they must, because they've made an offer, and they're very, very interested in you. And Sidney Sheldon would like to meet you in person. So the next day I had tea with Sidney Sheldon at the Beverly Hills Hotel, and that's how I got the part. Now, having said that, I think Sidney had already done his due diligence. He must be. He's a very smart man. And I realized later that we had many acquaintances in common, and they were comedy writers. And, of course, that's what Sidney did. And I think he asked people and found out about my work. I really do. Because I never tested for the part.
Interesting. So, as you said, you thought that they were going to pick someone tall and exotic and that sort of thing. One of the descriptions that I thought was really intriguing that you said in your book was that you kind of consider Genie sort of a tomboy.
Yes, I do. I do. She was a tomboy. She enjoyed physical things, and she was kind of open, like little boys are open. And she was never duplicitous.
Right,
ever.
Right.
You knew exactly. She was honest. You knew exactly what she was thinking and what she was doing every minute.
She was guileless.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well.
Well, okay.
I wouldn't say that.
Well, she didn't really mean any harm.
She wasn't duplicitous.
Right. What was shooting the pilot of I Dream of Genie like?
Cold. Very cold. We were at part of the Zuma Beach, and this is always the case, though. I mean, if you're doing a photo shoot or whatever, you're in bathing suits in winter, you know,
right.
And you're in fur coats in the summer.
Right.
And I was in a genie gauzy outfit. It was cold. But But it was one of the best shoots I've ever had. I love doing it.
You mentioned Sidney Sheldon. What was it like working with him and for him? And what kind of creative mind did he really have?
Sidney had the best imagination of anyone I've ever met. He could just conjure up stories and thoughts and people and characters. He should have been the 1001 Nights, you know, girl, if he was a girl.
Right.
He was very positive, had a very positive outlook, not a negative bone in his body. I loved working with and for him.
You also write in your book that your co-star, Larry Hagman, sometimes made life on the set, you might say, challenging.
Well, actually, it was challenging but kind of fun, too, you know? It kept me awake, I'll tell you. And I loved working with Larry. I'm not so sure the crew did, but but I did, yes.
Now, did I Dream of Jeannie have a close association with the real NASA?
Oh, yes, very. Very close. We didn't do anything that they didn't say okay to. Mm-hmm. And we met all the astronauts before they ever went up to outer space or to the moon. It was, I'll never forget that. We were in the room with Chuck Yeager. He was in charge of the, out here in California, the teaching the guys how to fly. And, you know, most of those men were scientists.
Mm-hmm.
They'd never flown an airplane before.
Yeah.
A couple were in the Air Force, but many, many of them were scientists. So they had to learn how to fly their little two-seater jet. I've forgotten what it's called now, but because they would fly from here to Houston,
right,
back and forth for training. And one day we went into a room and they brought all these men in, and they stood around the walls, and they all had the same turtleneck dark sweater and dark pants on. And Chuck Yeager said, "One of these men is going to the moon."
Wow.
And you know, you don't believe it when you hear it like that. You just go, "Wow." And of course they did. They did.
And actually several, at least a few of the astronauts appeared, is that correct, on I Dream of Jeannie, had cameos?
Yes, they did. Mm-hmm. But more than that, I worked with them on many Bob Hope specials.
Right.
He always had them. He was a big promoter of NASA. And I had a grand time when I did that. I did 21 Bob Hope specials, plus working with him live on stage. So I was very fortunate in meeting people like the astronauts or people in government that I would never have had the advantage to meet if I hadn't been with Bob.
A particularly wonderful character on I Dream of Jeannie was the consistently exasperated Dr. Bellows, who is eternally struggling with the maddening mystery of Major Nelson, as we'll hear in this clip.
I'm sorry I couldn't have stayed around here long enough to find out what makes you tick. Next to me, you're probably the most interesting psychiatric case I've ever come across.
Next to you, sir?
Yes. Sometimes I think I'm losing my mind. One minute I'm rational, and then the next minute, you do things that... Oh, well. Maybe the Eskimos will be good for me. They're simple people. They don't float in the air or change the days of the week or control the weather.
Yes, sir, perhaps if I have a word with General Peterson myself...
It won't do any good. He's in a very upset state. I wouldn't go in there if I were you.
Sir, perhaps...
Oh, I'd appreciate it very much if you'd write to me from time to time and let me know what you're doing.
Barbara, tell us about Hayden Rourke, who played Dr. Bellows.
Hayden Rourke was one of my dearest and closest friends. He was a classical actor. I'm always amazed, I don't know why I am, but I watch Turner Classic Movies sometimes at night.
Right.
And there will be Hayden in a fabulous part as a leading man or a character actor, but very well known at that time. I was a little girl, so I don't remember him in these movies. But my goodness, he was handsome and wonderful. And he was perfect for the part of Dr. Bella.
He was.
He was just perfect.
Now, he became very closely associated with that character. Do you think that bothered him, or did he revel in the role?
Oh, I don't think it bothered him at all.
Mm-hmm.
No. It, you know, an actor is never bothered when someone likes their character or what they've done.
Now, Claudio Guzman directed a number of I Dream of Jeannie episodes. What kind of director was he, and what kind of presence did he have on the set?
Claudio was very warm and lovable and had a great sense of humor, which worked beautifully with our cast. He was the perfect director for a comedy because he would think of cute, funny little things and for people to do and situations. We also had Gene Nelson. He did the first 13 shows and our pilot. And he was in a different way, because Gene was much more authoritarian. But he was a dancer and a gymnast, so the things he thought up were physical.
Right.
Wonderful. Wonderful for this show.
Right, because you said that even though he directed a relatively small number of episodes, he put his distinctive stamp on I Dream of Jeannie.
Oh, yes, he did. He certainly did. The blink. The blink was Gene's idea, yeah.
Really?
And many, many things.
Well, one guest star on I Dream of Jeannie held special meaning for you, an actor who played the powerful Blue Jinn, as we'll hear in this clip.
Blue Jinn!
Oh, I found it.
You know the trouble with you, fella?
You're hostile.
Yeah, hostile. You didn't think I had a genie of my own, did you, huh?
Master,
all right, get him, genie.
Master,
you're going to feed me to the sharks. Huh? How would you like me to feed you to the sharks, huh?
Oh.
Throw me into a live volcano? You know, if there's one thing I can't stand, it's a bully.
Master.
Get him, genie.
Oh. I shall take pleasure in seeing that you die slowly.
All right, genie. No.
I cannot, Master. He's the Blue Jinn. He's the one who put me in my bottle 2,000 years ago. And he's the most powerful one of us all.
Well, it's certainly a pleasure to meet you, sir.
Barbara, tell us about the actor who played Blue Jinn, your husband at the time, Michael Ansara.
Michael Ansara, yes. Michael was very well known for playing Cochise in the series The Broken Arrow. He was quite a heartthrob when we got married, and a fine classical actor, actually. And he played the Blue Jinn several times on the show. Plus, he played played some, I think, Air Force officers, but I don't know if it was Army or Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And he also directed three of the shows, so he was there a lot.
What qualities did he possess that made him so magnetic?
Well, he was a good actor. He was a good actor, but he also had a fabulous voice,
mm-hmm.
a very wonderful, rumbling voice. And he was 6'4", of course.
Right.
So the voice matched the body.
But also on a personal level, as a human being, what qualities did he possess in life?
He was a very good man. He was a straight arrow, I guess my dad would say.
Instead of a broken arrow.
Yes. Right. Oh, gosh. Oh, my. I stepped right into that one. Yes. He was honest to a fault.
Very good.
And kind. He is a very good man.
Now, our younger viewers... Excuse me, our younger listeners may not realize that TV back then was quite different. For instance, you, personally, as your character, could not reveal a certain part of your body on screen, and that sort of became Navelgate. Tell us about that.
Oh, well, there was a man, Mike Conley, who wrote for The Hollywood Reporter, and he would come down on the set looking for stories, of course. And he'd look at me and he'd say, "I don't believe you have one, a belly button." And I said, "Of course I have a belly button." And he'd say, "Okay, prove it." I said, "Nickel a peek." And we'd joke back and forth about it.
Right.
And I'd never show him. So he started writing about it. And when he wrote about it, then other writers and stringers across the country picked up on the story, and it became kind of a cause célèbre, and a silly one, but it snowballed into this, why don't they show her belly button? And then George Slaughter, a dear friend, who was at the time producing Laugh-In and was also on NBC, went to the powers that be and said, look, I'd like to premiere her navel on Laugh-In. And NBC, George told me about it. He said, and I had this meeting, this huge oak table with all the suits, quote unquote, sitting around this table discussing your belly button. He said, I've never seen anything so funny in my life. And they, of course, said, no, it could not be shown.
Now, wait a minute. Now, was NBC the only network that had that criteria? Could you show belly buttons, for instance, on ABC on Gidget?
They showed belly buttons on NBC.
Oh.
Laugh-In. Goldie Hawn had her belly
button
right. all the time.
But not yours.
But not mine. And we did three shows in Hawaii, and all the girls on the beach with me were in bikinis. I was in a one-piece bathing suit.
Now, you see, you should have sued. That's prejudice.
No.
See?
It's funny.
No, I'm kidding.
Funny. I don't know what their thinking was.
You mentioned this fellow before. Over the years, you worked with one Hollywood legend quite frequently, as we'll hear in this clip.
Daddy knows the Bible, but Mama knows the ways of the world.
Wait a minute. Hold it. You sure you've been in a convent all your life?
Did I do something wrong?
Something wrong. One more bump and the joint is closed.
Forgive me. Somebody said something and it activated something in my head.
Yeah, that's not what was activated. What could we have said? He asked me about the tablecloth and I said, take it off.
Yeah, well, Daddy was preaching.
Wait. Hold it. The fire isn't until next week.
Barbara, tell us about the extraordinary Bob Hope. And one thing in particular that absolutely blows me away, he was tireless. How was he like that? How was he able to do that?
I don't know. I truly don't. You're talking about in his later years?
Yes.
Because he was always full of energy.
Right.
As I said, I appeared with him 21 times on specials, and then I also toured with him, you know, singing. I went to the Persian Gulf with him. Now, when we went to the Persian Gulf, Bob was up there. I mean, he had to have been in his 90s.
Wow.
When we were there. And I was really tired.
Sure.
You know, when you go around, we flew around the world. And in a, I think it's called a C-130.
Mm-hmm, that's
right. There were no real seats for you to sit on. There were no beds. I, thank God, I had a big, puffy, sort of long jacket that I used to wear in the snow. And I brought it because they told me that the airplane had no lining at all.
Mm-hmm.
No heat. It was cold. And I would put that coat down on the ground, get a blanket on the ground, on the floor of the plane, and sleep.
Was he different? Was he different than anybody you ever worked with?
Well, he was much more businesslike and reasonable in his work. I'm comparing him to other comics I've worked with who are ruled by emotion usually, but not Bob. Bob saw things clearly and knew he would have made a wonderful director. He surrounded himself with fabulous, fabulous people who he had known for years and years and years, writers. You know, there was a whole crew of people who worked well together and who were talented. I enjoyed working with Bob because there was never any, you never had any temperamental tantrums or you knew exactly what was happening. I loved him. I loved him.
Everyone says that performing in front of USO crowds is the best experience a performer can have. Is that your experience?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They are so grateful, and they need it. They need that I'll tell you a story. When we were rehearsing to go to the Persian Gulf, the guys who were operating the cameras would come and watch our rehearsals because they wanted to know how we worked or what kind of work we were doing. And at one point, I was sitting next to one of them, waiting for my time or resting, whatever. And we started to chat, and he said, "Well, you know why I'm doing this, don't you?" And I said, "No, I don't," because, quite frankly, none of us were being paid. This was all gratis, even the union guys. He said, "I will never forget this man." He said, "I was in Vietnam. He was the only entertainer that came back behind the lines and entertained." He said, "I'll go anywhere with him." And you could tell it when we got on those ships and they'd bring the boys over on the aircraft carriers, and they see Bob, they just yell, and they loved him. They loved him. Oh, they liked the girls that were on the show, sure.
Right.
But Bob, they adored. They adored him.
And there'll never be another one like Bob Hope in terms of how he related to the soldiers and how they reacted to him.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. He was an upper, a real upper, in all ways.
In 1967, you co-starred in the TV special Kismet, as we'll hear in the following clip.
Not since Babylon read that writing, not since Jericho heard that trumpet, not since Nebuchadnezzar's hanging garden went to pot, not since that village near Gomorrah got too hot for Lot. No!
Barbara, tell us about your experience performing and doing Kismet on television.
Well, it was a fabulous experience. I loved the part. I loved Laloum. And actually, I hadn't been singing a lot when I did that, so it kind of got me back into the singing business, I guess you'd call it. And I loved working with Jose Ferrar and Anna Maria Albergetti and oh my goodness, help me out with the crew, with the cast. They were
George Chakiris was
Chakiris.
Right.
What a delight! What a beautiful voice! We had a good time doing it. It was and Bob Mackey designed those fabulous costumes.
Yes.
With very high heels.
Yeah.
And I was with those heels, I kept putting moleskin on my feet so that it wouldn't cut because I was bleeding.
Oh, my God.
And Bob came around once and looked, and he said, "Well, you should be one of the beggars." We had a lot of beggars on them, of course, in Kismet.
Right.
Playing. And he said, "Your feet look like you're playing one of the beggars. The camera better not be on that." Oh, gee.
So that wasn't done live. That was shot on tape?
I guess it was tape or film. Mm-hmm. I wish I had a copy. I only have a black and white copy.
Right.
And it was beautiful in color.
Oh, that's too bad.
Glorious in color.
That's too bad. Well, we're going to have to take a little break, but we'll be back in a moment with TV legend Barbara Eden, author of her memoir, Genie Out of the Bottle, who is traveling with us on the TV Time Machine.